Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone. WEBR Fairfax Radio, I'm Sue Bartholomew. Welcome to On the Commons. On the Commons with me today is Rick Bennett. Rick is a real estate broker from California, who's been having a lot of problems. Actually, his family's been having a lot of problems with their condominium, and you're going to hear about that, and you're going to hear Rick's own thoughts and ideas on exactly what it is that homeowners associations mean when you move into one of those. Rick, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. You're a broker, right?
That's correct.
You sell real estate.
Yes.
And you live in an association?
I actually do.
Actually do. It sounds surprising, huh?
Well, it's a little ironic, but yes, I'm in an association myself.
But that's not what... Your problems primarily are the condominium that your parents live in, correct?
Correct.
Can you tell us a little bit about what happened over there? I mean, it sounds like an absolute nightmare, and you sent me a lawsuit.
I did. Do you just want me to jump in and kind of run along with you on this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, since there is litigation, I think what I'll do is give you just an initial comment that I feel that we're at liberty to discuss anything that's noted in the lawsuit, because at this point it's a matter of public record.
Okay.
But in terms of discussing specifics of details of what may have happened or what may not have happened, et cetera, I think I'd like to keep things restricted just to items that are already a matter of public record, if that's okay.
That's perfectly okay. Can we talk a little bit about, go ahead, Rick. Tell us what you want to tell us.
Well, essentially, what we have in California, you may know there are a number of gated communities throughout California. I happen to reside in Palm Springs, as do my mother and father. They're retired senior citizens, and they moved to Palm Springs in 1995. And Palm Springs happens to have tremendous concentration of gated communities. In fact, I think there's probably more property in gated communities in Palm Springs, at least residentially, than there are that are not in gated communities. That being said, the experience has been anything less than what someone would ideally like to see their parents or anyone's parents experience in their retirement years. And after a great deal of frustration and a lot of angst and unpleasant experiences, my family found itself in a position of having to seek assistance through the legal system in order to address some real difficult and unpleasant experiences that my parents have been subjected to with their condominium development. Specifically, the lawsuit that they filed was filed in May of this last year, 2002. So we're just past roughly at the anniversary date of it, right on the maybe a week or two out. And it was basically stems from their unit being damaged substantially. They have a three-bedroom, two-bath condominium. The development, to describe it to you, is 42 acres. A lot of green belts. I believe there's 8 swimming pools, there's tennis courts, it's a gated community. Freestanding units, these are not stacked, and there are approximately 2 or 3 units to a building with garages, so they look almost like freestanding homes.
Okay, for some strange reason I was under the impression that they were stacked.
No, these are single story.
These are single story, and yet they're condominiums.
Yes, and there are 186 of them.
And there's okay. And what happened?
Well, effectively, the association decided, for reasons unknown, several years back, to engage in a re-roofing effort. There were units at the development that apparently needed roofing work done, and a gentleman was brought in to do roofing work, and the outcome of the roofing work was that the contractor left the project before it was completed. The association was gracious enough to inform everyone that he had declared bankruptcy, and the units were subjected to a great deal of leaking. A substantial amount of water intrusion was experienced by my parents' unit, and that developed into the growth of mold and mildew.
Now, was it leaking before the roof was replaced?
They bought the unit in 95,
okay.
And there were no known issues of leaking to speak of, other than perhaps, you know, people discussing at meetings, my unit needs a patch here or there, and I'm certain their unit must have had some degree of maintenance work done it prior to this re-roofing. But the amount of water intrusion and the actual damages that they experienced all occurred after this re-roofing effort. And subsequent to that effort being completed, the association engaged in a lawsuit, which was recently settled against a roofer who had gone bankrupt, so I don't believe there was any recovery from that person, but also against the manufacturer supplier who had provided the roofing materials.
Was the roofing material substandard or defective in any way?
I am informed, and I don't know, that the roofing material was not defective, but that the manner in which it was installed by the contractor was defective. And the source of that information was a letter sent to the homeowners in mid-2001 that basically gave a list of known defects. And most of those defects appear to, when you read the letter, suggest that the roofing work was done in an inferior fashion.
And so now they've got mold and mildew. I mean, mold and mildew seems to be the latest thing that everybody is complaining about. And generally you see that in sort of lower-end condominiums that are stacked. And for some reason, the construction is shoddy, and they just start leaking all over the place, and people get violently sick. And I understand your parents have both been ill, huh?
They've had a number of medical ailments that they never experienced before. And it's been disheartening. There's five children. I'm the second to the youngest, but I happen to be the only one that resides in the Palm Springs area. And it's been disheartening to see them in retirement years dealing with allergy problems, bloody noses, swollen eyes, respiratory problems.
Oh, you're kidding.
That were things that, you know, as a child, you don't expect to see your parents dealing with these kind of things. And when you grow up and you're the child and you have those things, your parents are able to typically take you to a doctor and address it swiftly or do something for you. And yet in this instance, at least in part, the damage has been something that they can't alleviate because they don't actually have the ability to re-roof their own unit. In a condominium project, as you know, you occupy and own the right to live in the airspace.
Mm-hmm.
But the common area roof and the rest of the structure that's been subjected to damages is something that they don't own.
So
therefore, they don't have the legal right to actually fix it, and the folks that have the responsibility to fix it thus far have failed to do so.
So basically, they're pretty much stuck.
I would believe that's an understatement.
Okay, well, sometimes we do understate things on this show, and sometimes we don't, but...
I don't mean to be glib, but I'm a little nervous, so forgive me.
But in terms of stuck,
I guess I'm not necessarily the most objective person when you talk about stuck, because obviously I have an emotional commitment and responsibility to my mother and father. But from a business standpoint and as a real estate broker, I think it's safe to say that if I were asked by a pair of senior citizens that I didn't know to come in and talk with them about marketing their property, and they disclosed to me that they had substantial damages in their unit, they were aware that this unit had mold and mildew, and they had heard that other units may, and had shared with me some of the other challenges that this particular couple seems to be facing. As a real estate broker, I don't know how I would adequately disclose that and not only protect the clients through a disclosure process, and in California we have very stringent disclosure requirements, but selfishly, as a broker, I don't know how I would protect my own interests. It's saying they're stuck is very difficult, because if you can't sell a property and get, you know, a premium price for it and extract your equity, and it's not terribly responsible or prudent to rent it under the circumstances, you actually are stuck. You really don't have a lot of recourse.
Okay, we're going to come back and talk about, the realtor's role in all of this. But when I said stuck, I meant that you don't own the roof.
Correct.
And people who typically buy a condominium are looking for sort of basically, and I hate to use the term, and I use it quite often here, and it's never an understatement, Rick, I promise you that. But one of the terms that's used quite often to market condominiums is carefree living.
Yes.
Because you don't have to presumably take care of the outer structure and the maintenance. So it's something that you don't own. It's something that you're paying for through your assessments, through your fees, your dues. And yet you are not allowed. You have to live with the existing conditions, and you are not allowed to go in and replace the roof and make sure that it stops leaking and make sure that you get rid of the mold so that you can start leading a healthy life again.
Correct.
And that's what I was saying when I said, that's what I was thinking of when I said you're basically stuck. They cannot replace the roof, can they?
No, and Shu, if you don't mind my saying this, to underscore the word stuck, I'll share the following with you, and I didn't mean to go off on the segue about real estate, but going back to the maintenance of the units, people do buy condominiums, whether they are stacked or single-story, with the idea of either retiring and having a carefree or worry-free existence and enjoying themselves, or in the Palm Springs area, not just retiring, but owning a vacation unit or a weekend unit or rental unit that is to be used to come out here and recreate, to play golf, lay in the sun, hike, whatever you happen to do out in the desert when you're playing. This is a vacation area. And the idea of carefree living is absolutely inverse in terms of its relationship to what these developments actually are, in that if the maintenance is not done properly or is not done regularly or done in a manner that is in a workmanlike fashion, it's anything but carefree. You actually can end up with both maintenance problems that are chronic or perpetually repeated, but at the same time, additional expense to keep repeating those maintenance problems.
That's true. But also, I make fun of the fact that we advertise, we market associations as being carefree living, because it's not carefree. It relies on people being more involved than they would be if they had their own homes and they were just taking care of the maintenance, hiring the kid down the street to mow their lawns and what have you.
Yep.
But not only that, but the entire investment is serve at the mercy of a handful of board members who may or may not know how to spell money, much less manage it.
You're absolutely correct.
And then you have to sit there and you have to look over their shoulders, or else face having to pay special assessments and face having to live under these conditions.
Well, Shu, along those same lines, though, with that responsibility that these board members take or accept, and they do call themselves volunteer directors and officers.
I love that, don't you?
I can't find a better phrase for it myself.
As opposed to professionals.
I wouldn't volunteer for something that I'm not qualified to do. Meaning, I wouldn't volunteer to give you a root canal or to reupholster your automobile. Those are not my areas of expertise.
Are you telling me that's not carefree living?
I don't believe it's carefree living.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
But what I was getting to is when you volunteer, that doesn't mean that you can disregard your responsibilities to use that amount of reasonable care that you might use if you lived in your own home, or perhaps if there are others relying on you, use that amount of care plus a degree more to make sure that when you're making a decision for maintenance, that if you're telling people that their living should be carefree, perhaps it actually could approach that.
Rick, let's go back to something you said.
Yes.
You said, I would never accept a volunteer position for something that I wasn't qualified for.
Yes.
How many people in an association are qualified to run a multimillion dollar corporation? And that, in essence, is what it is.
I can't answer that question for you accurately, because what has surprised me
Yes.
the most as we've moved through this is learning that there are no requirements to be on a board of director, perhaps other than be popular or to be a friend of someone who's been on the board. And in terms of going through and having even a checklist of saying, or have you been an accountant? Are you a lawyer? Do you have some degree of business acumen? Are your interpersonal skills such that you're going to be an effective member of the board? I've never seen that type of interview process, so I don't know if there are any qualifications.
Okay, but let's say that you don't have it. Let's say you're a dentist.
Yes.
And you do root canals routinely, and you're very qualified to do that. But since this is your home, and
yep.
since it is your money, and since it affects your not only your investment, but also the quality of your life, should you be excluded from being on the board?
No, I don't believe so. But at the same time, I think there's a degree of responsibility for anyone on a board of director, whether they be a dentist, a gardener, or a school teacher, that they are actually sitting as a representative of a corporation. It's not a social club. It's not a private organization where you just sit and serve your needs and the other needs of the members that are on the board with you. But you actually are a director of a corporation and should conduct yourself as if you're running a business. And I think a dentist is qualified to do that, provided he wants to be on the board and conduct himself in that manner.
But I guess I'm going back to the carefree living aspect of it.
Yes.
You buy into something, and you lose a tremendous amount of control.
Absolutely.
Over your life, over your assets, over a whole lot of things. I mean, you know, your parents are at the retirement stage. They should be enjoying life right now.
I couldn't agree with you more. When I expound upon these things, though, when you're talking about carefree living, our situation is extremely unique in that when this episode with this roofing came about, my father was approached and did, quote-unquote, volunteer his time. He's never been on the board of directors, has never asked to be on the board of directors, but he is a licensed contractor in the state of California, in good standing. He's retired. He's an honorary member of ICBO, which is the International Conference of Building Officials, and he was asked to review what was being proposed for these roofs. And when he brought to the attention of the association that it was his opinion, not as a roofer, but just as a general contractor, that what was being proposed didn't look like it was going to be feasible, the response was not welcoming the input or the expert information or the advice, but it was to the contrary. It was, we don't need to hear that, we're not interested, that's your opinion, but it doesn't matter. And, you know, in terms of being carefree, terrific, you should feel like it can be carefree, but if you see something that looks like it's going to interrupt your carefree living and you do try to correct it and you're not allowed to, then you're underscoring that part about not having any control. And our situation is a perfect example of what happens when, I believe, boards run astray or run amok, and people that honestly do want to volunteer and may have something to contribute of value are told it's not interest, you know, we're not interested. And then if there are some reversals with property damage or financials, the entire association ends up suffering through the damages and being asked to pay for them.
So you've got a roofer, and yep. he's gone bankrupt, did you say?
The gentleman declared bankruptcy about a year after he started the project.
So there's no way to recoup the money. How are you going to get the roofs replaced? And how is the condition going to be rectified, or is it?
Well, at this point, Shu, the old litigation with the association, which was completed in late 2001, resulted in a settlement being received from the manufacturer supplier. From that settlement, a large portion of the monies went to legal fees. So the association was left with, I'm going to give you a rough number, let's say $600,000 for replacing the roofs.
Okay.
That includes replacing the roofs and fixing all of the interiors. However, the cost to do that work is far in excess of that amount. So the association, as you know, they are empowered to perform maintenance, is either going to, in all likelihood, take out financing, or they're going to look to the homeowners for a special assessment to pay for the roofs again, which were paid for in full by a special assessment previously. Six years after they were special assessed, they're going to have to be paid for again.
So, wait a minute. Now you're making this really interesting, Rick.
Yes.
They were special assessed to replace the roofs.
Correct.
The roofs were replaced. The guy went belly up. The replacement was not very good. You've now got all kinds of defects and leaky roofs and mold and all kinds of things. So now the homeowners are going to be special assessed a second time to replace the same roofs that they've already paid for once before?
That's what's being discussed. I attended a meeting recently and was handed a memo that was dated April 22nd. And it was a memo that was circulated at the meeting between the association's management company and the board of directors. And it states that they are in discussions with a lender to implement a special assessment to offset roofing costs again. And the original roof was to have a 10-year warranty on it. So we're 6 years into it. They're talking about paying again for roofs that should still be under the original warranty.
And that's carefree living?
Not in my book, Shu. Seemingly to some people, it's carefree. To me, it doesn't do anything but create worry and anxiety and a great deal of financial upheaval.
So you've got almost 200 people living in this community.
Yes.
And they've paid once for roofs. And, I mean, roofs are not, it's not, a Coke through drive, through McDonald's drive-thru.
No.
And this is expensive.
It's very expensive.
And they paid for it once.
Yes.
Was the roofer bonded, licensed, insured? There's nothing to fall back on there?
Well, actually, Shu, you've touched on something that's quite interesting, and I've been asking myself about this, and I was given some information recently which really surprised me, but the original roofer who was selected by the association's board of directors did have a license from the state of California, and he did have what in California is the minimum amount of bonding or insurance, which is required to be in business, which is $7,500. The contract, however, called for a $2 million contractual liability insurance policy, which was supposed to be maintained and kept in force by the contractor. And if the contractor didn't maintain it and keep it in force, the association was to maintain it, keep it in force, and deduct the amount of the premiums for the insurance policy from the contractor's payments. And that $2 million insurance policy was apparently never obtained.
Wow.
The association's contract, which actually called for insurance, which may have helped if this ultimate devastation took place, was never really followed, and if that insurance was picked up, we may not be having the conversation we had today.
Did the roofs cost $2 million? Is that what this...
No, the old roofing assessment, and I'm doing some of this from memory, was, I believe, roughly $525,000. And the $2 million insurance policy was, in my understanding, I believe it was to not only offset the cost to replace the roofs if they failed, but also to honor the promised warranty obligations. Because the homeowners were promised in exchange for their special assessment monies, whether they paid in full or over a staggered period of time, they were promised what was called a 10-year ironclad warranty, which for 10 years, anything that went wrong, meaning leaks, problems, defects, were to be paid for by the contractor. And I believe that $2 million insurance policy, which was called a contractual liability policy, also covered that warranty obligation.
And since that was never obtained, not only did the owners in this particular association not get their 10-year warranty, but it's going to cost them. How much is it going to cost to go in and repair the mold and all the damage that you have to the interior of the units?
Shu, specifics, I don't know. I can tell you at this juncture, some roofs have been replaced in full, including the unit that my parents are residing in. That unit had a new roof put on it fall of last year.
Okay.
Now, whether that was simply because at that point litigation had been filed, I don't know.
Is that the roof watertight now?
Well, I assume so. I don't know yet.
Okay, you haven't had any rain, huh?
We've had rain. I don't think we've had a new leak, but all they did was replace the exterior of the roof.
Okay.
None of the interior repairs were made.
Okay, but there's interior damage to the unit as well, right?
Substantial, yes. And what the total is, I don't know. I can tell you that I was given a copy of the roofing contract for this latest roofing effort. And the contract is only to replace the roofs on certain units and to repair the roofs on the rest of the units. And that contract is for in excess of $1.2 million.
Wow.
But that only covers the exteriors of the units. It's not discussing interior repairs.
How many other units have got interior damage as well?
I don't know a specific number offhand.
But it's your parents is not the only one.
No. There have been many units repaired. There are other units under repair as we speak and other units scheduled for repair.
Go away. Stay tuned because we'll be right back with more with Rick Bennett, and we're going to go into talking about realtors' role in all of this when we come back here listening to On the Commons, and we'll be back.
Bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs. Life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
WBR Fairfax Radio, welcome to On the Commons. I'm Shu Bartholomew. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions, and joining me on the Commons today is Rick Bennett. Rick is a real estate broker in Palm Springs, California, and he's also watching his parents go through a lot of problems with their association, and we're talking a little bit about that, and we're going to be talking a little bit about realtors' roles in selling real estate and how he feels about it and all kinds of good stuff. So, you know, in addition to Carefree Living, just pull up your chair, get comfortable, because there's more to come with Rick. Rick, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We were talking about your parents' unit, and they did get a new roof. But there's all kinds of mold and mildew and other nasty things growing on the inside. Is their unit scheduled to be repaired anytime soon?
Or
at all?
No, it's
not.
It's not? No.
So what happens with all the stuff in there?
Well, Sue, it's part of that touches on the litigation, so I'll be very cautious with my response, but My in answer to your question, the question you just asked us, meaning why is it scheduled for repair, is an issue that has been extremely distressing to my mother and father both, in that that's one of the reasons the lawsuit was filed. The association has repaired other units, both with assistance from their insurance company, were informed, as well as via the use of homeowners funds. And these are units, some of which are smaller than my parents, some of which may have more damage, some have less. Some of these units that have been repaired are even occupied on a regular basis. And for reasons unknown, my parents' unit has failed to be scheduled for repairs. And in frustration, after requesting repairs, both writing and orally, for a protracted period of time, the only venue they felt they had open to them and the family felt was appropriate to pursue was a claim on the association's insurance policy, which was declined. And that resulted in a suggestion from the association's insurance carrier that if the issue was as egregious as they thought it was, that they needed to retain legal counsel and file a lawsuit. So that's where we are today.
Carefree Living?
Very carefree, I'll tell you.
More Carefree Living.
I've never seen two more pleasant, unassuming people dealing with more stress and consternation, which looks like anything but Carefree Living.
Have any units been foreclosed on? I mean, doing what I do, Rick, I get so many calls and emails and questions, and people send me stuff. And when you end up usually in an association where there's been a lot of problems and where they've had to special assess and where for some reason they cannot get the stuff repaired, they go to special assessments, and not everybody is able to pay those special assessments.
You're correct.
And so through no fault of their own, they end up losing their homes to foreclosure.
Yes.
Has that happened in your association, in your parents' association?
There have been units foreclosed on. If I were to tell you it was for a specific special assessment, I don't know that for a fact. What I look at, Chu, in my analysis of things is a little more globally, and that is, if I see an individual's home being foreclosed upon and someone says to me, well, they've lived here 6 years and they haven't paid their dues for 3 months, I look at it and say, okay, well, they are delinquent, obviously, and perhaps there's a way to address that. But if they hadn't been forced to pay a special assessment years ago for roofing, they may have had that money available to them today to be current on their homeowner's dues. So it isn't real clear to me when I talk about foreclosure how it actually happened, but there have been a number of units foreclosed in this particular development.
And there's only, what, 187 units, you said?
Right.
You're a broker. I used to sell real estate a long time ago. I know that when you qualify a homeowner,
yes,
or a prospective homeowner, you take into account the assessment, and then you have these ratios. And they have to be able to, no bank is going to loan them money if they cannot make the payments.
Yes.
usually they don't, the banks don't take into account a special assessment. Now, I don't know what the dollar amount of the special assessment was in your parents' case. I'm not even going to ask you for it. I have heard of special assessments that have been, you know, a couple of hundred dollars. I've also heard of them being up to $80,000 per unit.
Yes.
That's a substantial chunk of money.
Yes, it is.
And that can assist with the carefree living, huh?
I like your continued reference to that.
Well, you know what? It's just, to me, that's false advertising. And if General Motors started giving out false advertising like that, the government would be all over them.
You're correct.
Yet in real estate, the single biggest investment most people make, you know, we sort of cloak it, we wrap it up in this fantastic, phenomenal package, yet what's happening to your parents is very, very upsetting to you.
Yep.
There are 50 million Americans living in associations and 50 million people subject to the same kind of nonsense that's going on. So, yeah, I like to point out that this is carefree living. All right, you're a real estate broker, Rick.
Yep.
I'm a potential buyer. What would you advise? I come in and ask you for 4 bedrooms, 2 baths. What would you advise me to do?
With my knowledge at this stage of my life, Shu, I would advise that no one that I know of purchase into any type of deed-restricted property, gated community, common interest development, condominium project, whatever you care to call them. Simply refer to them as a homeowners association. Under the present circumstances, and that may sound contrary to a lot of my colleagues' opinions, but in the context that I understand the law as it currently sits, a homeowner who buys into that type of development that we just discussed actually is buying into a communal type lifestyle wherein they check the majority of their legal rights, the majority of their civil rights at the door or at the closing table or when they drive through the gate, and they become subjected to an environment that basically they have no control over. And when situations get difficult or unpleasant or extremely out of hand, they have very little recourse unless it's to go into the civil arena. And I don't believe that's a fair position to put people into, because many people don't understand what they're actually buying into until they hear a horror story or it actually begins to happen to them.
You know, on the commons, our motto is you're leaving the American zone.
Yes.
When you buy into an association. And in essence, that's exactly what you just said right now.
Yes.
You're leaving the American zone because you have to check all of your civil rights, all of your legal rights, all of your constitutionally protected rights at the gate and before you go into this. When did you become aware of what associations really were? Because, you know, when I bought my house initially, we were told, hey, this is great, you know, it comes with all these amenities. There's a lake, there's a pool, there's a pond, there's tennis courts, there's, you know, all park-like things, and it's all private. You know, you don't have to have the riffraff in.
Yes.
It's all private. It's not a gated community, but it's privately owned. When did you become, I mean, that's a selling point. When did you become aware that this is not quite, you're not getting what you're seeing, or what you're seeing is not what you're getting?
Shu, I have to acknowledge that I've been licensed, I left college in 1986, and I have a degree in finance, and I got my real estate license right out of school. And I was in commercial real estate and had no knowledge of homeowners associations other than the isolated horror story. I had no knowledge of this entire arena until my parents moved to Palm Springs, which was 1994, and we became exposed to this entire arena when they and our family bought into this particular development and became educated very quickly in terms of the lack of governmental oversight, the lack of assistance that you can get from any regulatory agency and the lack of control you have over virtually most aspects of your life.
Have you tried to do, so you sell real estate, you're a broker. Have you talked to other colleagues?
Yes.
About this? What is their view?
I'm rather subjective and very careful when I discuss things. And in the majority of my conversations, I'll discuss things with another broker, simply because there is a difference in terms of the experience, possibly the responsibility aspect that a broker has versus a salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
But in my discussing both this particular situation and things in general, there seems to be two schools of thought. The first is it's the buyer's responsibility. They get the documents through escrow or at the closing table or back in your world when trading papers, and it's up to them to decide if they do or don't want to approve these governing documents and to buy into this. And after that, they're on their own. The other school of thought is more along my line, and that is, if we're not supposed to be responsible for educating people as professionals before they sign on the dotted line, then we need to find some degree of assistance or oversight or a regulatory resource that will have some sort of jurisdiction, and even if it's nothing more than a simple pamphlet or booklet that someone is given when they're buying into these types of real estate opportunities, that they become a little bit more educated with what they're actually purchasing. To date, I haven't seen that anywhere. So it's, you know, more or less something that I believe is going to have to take a lot of energy and time and effort to affect some changes in.
Who do you think should do the educating, Rick?
At the moment, people like myself or other people who decide to take it upon themselves to risk the potential jeopardy of losing a sale over the potential risks down the road of having litigation and upset clients because they've purchased something that they really didn't know what they were buying, and they're going to look back to you for some responsibility. That's something as a professional I don't want.
You know, you sound just like I did back when I was selling them. You know, I would tell, because one thing we have to be very careful, or you know, realtors have to be very careful of, is you can't steer clients anywhere.
Yep.
And because, you know, you've got all of these fair housing laws and things like that.
Yes.
And if you had a homeowner who had a listing, their house on the market, and nobody showed it, you know, they could go after you. As you know, you have to be very, very careful. I don't know what you do. I used, you know, once I realized that there was no fixing this thing, I used to ask my clients to please let me know,
mm-hmm.
or please ask me to limit my search,
yes.
to non-controlled housing.
Right.
And because then once that's what you've been asked to do, you're okay. You could do that, right?
Right. If I might just respond quickly,
yeah.
You'd ask me where I thought this education should come from. In the absence of it coming from someone like yourself with what you just described you did with clients, or someone like myself taking it upon themselves to perhaps slow down the inertia of the selling process or looking to try to throw in a little bit of education, I personally believe that there should be some type of oversight on a regulatory basis. And I'm not a Big Brother person. I'm opposed to Big Brother type of regulation. But I feel that the abuses that I've heard about in this arena and the experience my mother and father and family have experienced, it's an example as to why some type of oversight is needed, because absent the oversight, we have our situation. And our situation is egregious, but I'll acknowledge it's not isolated. I've heard of other situations that are also difficult. And I think that education and that oversight needs to come from somewhere.
But that would be defeating the whole purpose of setting up these associations, because the government has decided they want to slough off a great portion of their responsibility to the taxpayers.
Yes.
And so they've set up these quasi-governments, these private governments.
Yes.
And they don't want to get involved and make sure that these private governments are doing their jobs.
Well,
they want to distance themselves from the petty everyday problems.
Shu, I agree with you that the difficult portion of that argument, though, is the fact that they're not private governments. They're actually, in most cases, corporations that are licensed by any particular state.
Legally, yes.
And there should be oversight of a corporation that is a nonprofit mutual benefit corporation, which is what many of them are, just like there's the oversight of General Motors. If General Motors does something that is fraudulent or is damaging or that is not done in compliance with corporations' law, they're held to a standard of being accountable for it. A corporation that is a homeowners association should have some sort of accountability or a standard. Just because they're homeowners and they're paying mortgage payments and making a lot of interest payments to banks and making payments to insurance carriers and making vendors rich that take care of them doesn't, in my mind, mean that they should be left without any sort of representation. And at the moment, that seems to be what the situation is.
But, you know, you were talking about General Motors just a second ago. General Motors doesn't normally fulfill some of the functions that traditionally were fulfilled by the municipal government. Things like picking up the trash, plowing the snow, maintaining the streets, providing street lights, and doing all of these traditional municipal government function things, which is where the quasi-government, government by contract, if you will, comes into it. And so GM comes strictly under the consumer protection thing. But when you buy into an association for some strange reason, the government says, oh, whoa, wait a minute, you know, hands off. This is a private, you know, private agreement. This is something that you agreed and you went into it with your eyes wide open, and we can't interfere. That would be an unconstitutional interference right now. So, sorry, bud, you're on your own.
Well, then, taking that argument to the extreme, Shu, and perhaps there needs to be some discussion of some sort of tax relief for the people that are in these quasi-private governments, because if they're going to be taxed and they're going to be paying property taxes on their real estate or the rights to occupy these spaces, and they're not getting any representation, and they have to rely on their own small little municipal private government, it sounds as though they're being taxed without representation.
It does, doesn't it?
It sure does. And I haven't taken a history class for several years, but I thought that was a big problem with the U.S. history quite some time ago.
Yeah, the last time we discovered that, we had a big tea party, didn't we?
I thought we did, too.
Maybe it's time we had another tea party someplace. You know, the carefree living type of tea party.
Carefree living tea party. That's there's a new annual event.
Everybody bring your own tea bag.
Humor helps, doesn't it?
Oh, you have to have humor. You have to be able to laugh at it. That's why I keep coming back to the carefree living stuff, because I really think that it is false advertising. And if GM were to do something like that, they'd be paying through the nose.
Well, you know, Shu, there's folks like yourself that are out there doing some phenomenal work. I've been blessed to talk to pair of columnists from L.A., Steve Glassman and Donnie Venetian.
They're wonderful,
aren't
they? They
put out a terrific book that I picked up, and it's called Villa Appalling. I actually handed that off to my parents.
Uh-huh.
They've turned around and handed it off to a couple of friends. And, you know, frankly, my parents' situation is it's horrible. But when you read their book or when you start hearing other stories, and there are a number of them in there, and I've heard them from other people,
mm-hmm.
You start to see patterns, and you start to see repeated incidences. And, you know, at this point, Shu, I'm really wondering if in all of these discussions, we don't all need to look at a little bit bigger picture and start to say, what is going on with this? And if this is happening in Virginia, and it happens in San Francisco, and it's happening in Palm Springs, and it happens in Orange County, why are these instances occurring, and why do they all seem to be so similar? Maybe one is with a leaking roof, and one is with painting, and one is with something else.
One is with a pudgy pooch, that's too...
Yes, but you seem to see homeowners that are paying monthly dues, ostracized, mistreated, to the extreme foreclosed upon, and yet you're talking about their homes and their... I mean, that's their little castle. If you retire and you've done great and you live in an enormous home somewhere in the country, you know, terrific. If you've done well and you decide you want to live a little more modestly and you're living in a small condominium to keep things simple and quote-unquote carefree, but you have a question, you should be able to have access to association books. If you need a question answered, you should get a clear question that addresses your specific issue. And it should be done in a polite manner, and it should be done in a way that makes you feel like you're part of your own community and you're getting what you're paying for.
But you see, we want to make sure that it's so carefree that we don't want you worrying your pretty little head about what the books say.
That's correct.
And you're right. I mean, that's probably the single biggest complaint that I get from people is they want to see what's happening to the books and records.
Right.
And they're denied that right. And the fact is that you have, if you live in an association, you are responsible.
Right.
For anything the board does, you have a right.
Don't we all wonder, though, that when we're told no, and you can't see the contract, or you can't see the book, or you're not in privity of contract to have that document, even though your money is being used to pay the contract, don't we all wonder why it's being kept from us?
You know, Texas legislature held some hearings.
Yes.
And they wanted to know if anybody within the government, and this was last year, I believe, within the government had any jurisdiction or would get involved to help homeowners. And somebody from the Attorney General's office, I believe, was there. And he said, yeah, well, you know, we don't do a whole lot, but we do occasionally get involved. And he cited one case. Apparently this guy called the association and said, look, we keep paying our assessments, and yet the swimming pool is green and slimy, and the tennis court's cracked and it's got weeds growing through it, and what's happening to it? You know, when are you going to fix this? And they said,
yep.
We don't have any money. And he said, well, why not? We keep paying the money. And he says, we don't have any money. Well, I want to see the books and records. And the board said, we lost them.
Yes.
So he goes to the Attorney General, and the Attorney General intervenes on his behalf, and he goes to the board, and he says, could I please see the books and records? And they said, oh, we don't have them. He says, I would like to see the bank statements. He says, we lost them.
Uh-huh.
Well, the Attorney General went to the bank and subpoenaed the bank records, and guess what he found? The association board members were using association funds and drawing checks on association checks to cover their business expenses.
Stunning.
Well, what's really stunning, Rick, is that to me that's a crime.
Yes, it is.
And what's really stunning is they took them to mediation and they agreed that the board members would refund a portion of the money they stole. And that's about as far as it got.
Mm-hmm. Shu, unfortunately, I don't think that's an isolated incident.
No, it's not.
And what is distressing to me is when you have people that are entrusting their money to others to properly put it away, properly manage it, and properly expend it. If a bank did that, there would be a completely different issue. If an attorney does that to a client, it's a completely different issue. If an investment advisor does it. But when it comes to a homeowners association, when you hear of these stories, it sounds as though, well, that's okay because it's a homeowners association.
It's
I don't buy into that. It's not right.
It's carefree living. What's a crime someplace else is a crime anywhere.
Right.
Rick,
well, it might be carefree if everyone had a checkbook and everyone could strike the pen. But it doesn't quite seem to work that way.
No, it doesn't.
And I find it in instances where people are making monthly payments and they're not nominal amounts of money, and these are regular assessments. I don't think it's unreasonable for them to expect that they're getting a little bit of service, a little bit of courtesy, and a little bit of value for that money that they've worked so hard for.
That's true. Rick, we're out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining me today. Good luck to you. Good luck to your parents. I hope you'll come back sometime with better news.
Thanks for having me.
Keep doing what you're doing in terms of being a realtor. We need more people like you. And for